accession number 18261, Real 6.
Let's start Real 6.
Oh, right. We were in the customs sheds, and he said, "This MP officer said you were smoking." So anyway, he said, "I have 40 prisoners on this ship." He said, "We're going to Catterick, the glass house." He said, "You can take them up there." I said, "I live down here along the road here." I said, "He said you'll have an escort to go with you." He said, "Six men." I said, "Six men for four." I said, "Are they chained together?" "Or no?" He said, "They're in handcuffs." I said, "Well, that's not a lot of good." I said, "40 of them. Six men and me." He said, "You'll be armed, of course." We still had our... No, we had a rifle. We'd handed them in a long time before. We never had rifles. We only used to have special ones for guard mounting. That's all. And, or patrols. He said, you can take charge. He said, "No, I'll get you six other men from somewhere." He said, "You can take them to Catterick." I said, "Well, you can forget about it, mate." I said, "Look," I said, "my kit's all out there." I said, "You just about got it." I said, "I should go and make sure he checks it all right." He said, "All right." So I went hoofing back over there. And the other bloke said, "Right," he said, "give us your overcoat and you have mine." So his overcoat, private's overcoat. They come and check me kit. "Right, this lad, pick your kit up." So I put me kit bag on. Another bloke walked alongside with his kit bag on his shoulder. And we walked straight up the train, got in the train. And these MPs were looking all over for everybody. They had just six blokes, captive blokes. They'd all be in charge of them. So we got in the train and we sat in there, and you say, "I never had the sergeant's stripes on." That was an offence in the first place. Anyway, private had my stripes also. Once the train got going, we swapped our coats back. And because as I say, they were nice fellas, the Durhams. They wouldn't see you in trouble anyway, you know. Anyway, got an order shot, had a nice breakfast. "This is your last chance to sign on." All that old nonsense, you know. Oh, I don't know where we were in order shot, but we were in order shot. We got in this truck, RS Seaboy. I said, "I'd never been to Woking or Aldershot." I said, "It's not very far to Woking. Was it 15 miles from Aldershot to Woking? Not far, is it?"
"Something around there."
I said, "You've been there before?" He said, "No, he's only come here yesterday." I said, "A lot of good." I said, "Anybody blokes know where Woking is?" "Never heard of it, never mind know where it is." I'd heard of it, obviously heard of it. So I said, "Right, there's an old boy here." I said, "Do you know Gwendolyn?" He said, "I don't know. There's no signposts up yet, proper signposts yet, you see. Because they were all taken down in the war, all the signposts were. The Germans never had maps, did they?" So I sees this old boy with a walking stick. I said, "Which is the road to Woking? Are you who's up here?" It wasn't the right road, was it? I thought, if I ever see him again, I'll break his walking stick. We eventually arrived at Woking. But this time, all our lot had gone. And we were getting mixed up with chaps from local blokes. We got in there. Got our suit of clothes, which was quite good stuff they were made of, the demob suits. The raincoats were a lot of bottom, a trilby hat and a pair of brown shoes and a shirt, a blue striped shirt, a tie, ordinary plain tie. All in a big box. There was big boxes all over Woking there was. The folks took them out as soon as they got out of the demob suit, they took the clothes, they stuffed them in their kit bag or something, and chucked the box down the ground. There were all these boxes everywhere there was. Train to London, then back down. Had a fracas with some old woman who wanted me to get her away, and I refused to get her away. She picked just there where I was with all my kit to try and walk through with her two Pekingese dogs under her arm. I said, "No, you go on back down there." And I got home that afternoon, Saturday afternoon, about 2:30. I had 90 days leave to come, paid. Got a warrant for every fortnight. I think I drew £14 a fortnight or something, which was good money in 1948, £7 a week. Because all my, anyway, as I said, I didn't drink much. I kept on getting built up, and my 9 months shilling a day helped it quite a bit, you know. And then the sergeant's pay was 10 and 6 a day. With 10 pence overseas allowance. That stopped the second I got on the boat. That stopped. And 10 and 6 a day, 7 days a week. Which wasn't bad money, but we started to buy our kit then. We had to pay for socks and things like that, you know. So a pair of socks was a shilling or something. But being the Durham Light Infantry served 21 years in China, Tintin. That was their overseas posting. I mean, someone went to India. I mean, the Raj and all that old nonsense and so on and so forth. I mean, we're world dominant and all that sort of thing. But I don't know what we're doing in China, quite honestly. But there was British troops here. But that was the Durham's overseas posting, was Tintin. And, because Fred had been there. 21 years they did. From the time they got out and the time they got back, the bloke did his extra year for the King. 22, very often. A little bit more. And, they, as I say, Fred had been there, and Fred... The regiments came home in June, that's right. The two battalions came home in June. They were amalgamated at Bransworth Castle, a big parade. Fred was one of the colour party. He sent me a card, I can't find it, I don't know what's happened to it. He sent me a card. And they formed up, 1st Battalion, and then they went to Korea. So there you go, that's it. You know. I had my 90 days leave and I started at work at Whitson over the Isle of Wight. They said, I went to work for the firm. I said, come to the office. I said, no, I'm going to timber hauling.
Can I just ask you one or two questions about things you've said? What did you mean when you said the UNRRA were a nuisance?
Well, instance. We were allowed 40 fags a week in the NAFI. We had to buy them. We had coupons to buy 40 fags a week, English fags.
This is in Greece?
This is in Greece, yeah. It's all in Greece. UNRRA was everywhere. You're not in relations at least with ravaged areas, what, or something. Something like that. So, I've taken to smoking Greek cigarettes. They're quite nice. If you bought them in their normal form, before they're processed and turned into Turkish fags in posh packets, they're quite nice. So I used to buy just going up to a kiosk in the town and buy a handful. About 2 bob for a big handful of fags, as many as you could put in a paper bag. And I smoked a lot of Greek cigarettes. I smoked a lot of cigarettes. I must have smoked about 1 million of fags in my lifetime, I think. And I went down the town one day and I stopped at a kiosk to buy some, because they had little kiosks everywhere with a girl or a young fella. And there was this girl, and I said, I'll have a handful of those here. She said, would you like some English cigarettes? I said, do what? She said, English cigarettes. I said, oh. So she put this box out. She said, those were those. One box had UN on and one box had NAFI on. NAFI stores for HM Forces. Another box is stamped UN. They're gold flake. So anyway, I said, I'll have them. I'll have those NAFI ones. Righto, so 200. Packet of 200, you see. But the same price we paid the NAFI. So the NAFI sergeant told me, he said, I asked him, why can't we have some more fags? He said, because we haven't got any. He said, that's our ration. So I went over back to camp. I went in there to see him that evening. I took this box in there. I said, do you want to buy some cigarettes? Where'd you get them from? Wasn't a kiosk in the town. I said, don't say that. I said, I've already been at the Provost Marshal's office with them. I said, they've taken details. I said, they've also taken details of the kiosk. I said, you haven't about this? He said, no, I don't know about it. He was an RASC bloke. He said, I don't know about it. I said, no, I just bet you would. He was quite an honest sort of fella. And he was a terrific stink about it. And I said, the Provost Marshal's office, which was on our way back from the town into our camp, off the tram. We used to drive free on the trams and the buses because there was a Scotsman owned them. All of them. Apparently, he thought it was funny colour yellow. And I told him about the UNRRA ones as well, the UN ones as well. I knew it turned out there was a lot of stink over it. I never got called in to give evidence or anything, but there was a terrific stink about it. And our NAFI ration was increased to a bit more. But we used to go on all the time. There was people down, there was, the Greeks told us, they said, you see that boat? I said, yeah. That's the United Nations boat. We've got the United Nations stores. I said, I'll come off the boat down there. He said, half of it will disappear. Which it did. I mean, we can't prove it. But this is what they said.
And you also said a short service commission was of no use. What did you mean by that?
Well, it depends on how you feel. I mean, I've since been told a short service commission was a 3-year job. 3 years. Right? You were lucky if you progressed from one pip. You were just a platoon officer. You were lucky you progressed and won. I don't know what the money was. I don't think it was anything exceptional for you know, for being an officer. Plus the fact that you also had mess fees to pay, which were the second lieutenant's mess fees or whatever they are for a thing. And that was it. So you didn't go anywhere.
How do you feel now about having served in the DLI?
Well, I think that maybe I should have stayed in the service. Really and truly. But having said that, the regiment went to Korea. I might not be here at all, might I? And I had a job to go to when I came home. I mean, I didn't have any ties anywhere else. It was only me and the family. It was only me, mother, father, and me. And I had this job, which I hoped would get me to Timberholland. I mean, the firm's got a big wharf down at Shoreham. It turned 8 years later that I was supposed to have gone down there. Because at that time, I was well up on metric measure of that, and all the timber that was coming in from the continent was in metric. And I knew quite a bit about metric measure, as well as anything else, because we'd all been metric measure in Greece anyway. And I wasn't told about this until about 3 years afterwards. I was talking to the boss. The boss was one that was about to come and speak to you.
One final question. You mentioned Kipling living at Burwash. Were there any local legends about him?
Kipling?
Rudyard Kipling.
No, there was nothing. I mean, they didn't take any notes of people sort of thing in those days. I mean, oh, Kipling lived there. That was it. But I mean, I knew of Rudyard Kipling and his poetry.
But there weren't any local stories passed down about
him. I mean, his house is Bateman's, his house is open to the public and all that sort of thing, but he was just somebody else.